Welcome to Windrush What's Next? The Struggle for Justice, a brand new broadcast series which has been commissioned by the Black Cultural Archives to examine the aftermath of the Windrush scandal. This entire series was recorded and produced during lockdown and is funded by the Paul Hamlin Foundation. I am your host, Sinai Flary, and this series is dedicated to all Windrush survivors and the late Windrush campaigner, Paulette Wilson. In this episode, we will be discussing activism with Windrush campaigner and social commentator, Patrick Vernon OBE.
Windrush, what's next? The struggle for justice in memory of Paulette Wilson.
Hi, Patrick. Thank you for joining me.
No, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to be involved. I mean, obviously, I've worked with Colourful and we've been documenting over the last year and a bit the struggle for Windrush. So it's great to be involved in this new series.
Now, let's go all the way back, Patrick. When did you first become aware that the hostile environment policies were affecting people from the Windrush generation?
Well, I mean, I was aware of the hostile environment policy because I live in Hackney and I can remember seeing those vans driving around Hackney, those go-home vans. So, And I actually remember even taking a picture of one, which was actually down the bottom of my road. And I actually was tweeting this, saying, how can this van drive around Hackney and London in such a way, telling everyone of colour, go back home? It was just so indiscriminate. Obviously, at the time, I didn't know it was actually directly going to have an impact on the Windrush generation and their children. It was just really, but I knew it was going to have an impact on all people from different communities as well. There have been immigration issues affecting the Black community for decades. I used to be a councillor in Hackney and I was involved in one or two cases. But most of the immigration stuff was always in the context of there must be overstayers. That's the way it's always presented, that these were overstayers, people taking their chance coming here illegal in the first place to Britain. And there may have been people that in that category. And I know that there have been a lot of coverage over the last few years. But in terms of the hostile environment policy under the Immigration Act of 2014, how it was brought to my attention was through one particular case. I remember reading about Paulette Wilson in The Guardian around about November 2017. I didn't know Paulette at that time, but I got to know her about 6 months afterwards. And she was telling her story, how she got detained twice in Yarlsville Detention Centre because she received a letter in 2016 stating that she, even though she'd been here for over 50 years, she was deemed to be an illegal immigrant because she couldn't prove she was British. That's the first time I was aware. And then there were other cases that were covered in The Guardian, like Sylvester with his cancer treatment, Anthony Bryant. But the case I got involved in, which led me to start campaigning around the scandal, was Iwaldo Romeo. I have a radio show in Hackney, a community radio station called Reels River Radio, based at Newington. I've been doing my show for about a few years, and the Alicia Graham, who a Black woman who runs the show station, contacted me and said, Patrick, I know that you used to be a councillor. We've got a mutual friend who may be caught up in the hostile environment. Can you help in any way? So it was actually Oliver Romeo, and I got to know him. It was actually through his daughter, Michelle Romeo, who first contacted me. Then she sent me first documentation from the Home Office. Then I was in contact, spoke to Iwaldo on a few occasions. And that's when I realised about the extent of the hostile environment policy.
Right. I mean, it's been ongoing for some time, and I know Wendy Williams published her Lessons Learnt review, where she says the Windrush scandal was foreseeable and avoidable. Do you agree with this? And I mean, did you realise it was such a big issue affecting hundreds, if not thousands, of people at the time?
It was avoidable because there have been warning lights for a number of years. I mean, a number of lawyers and campaigners and even the High Commissioners were raising these issues to the Home Office and the Foreign Commonwealth Office over the last few years about their concerns. But the Home Office were aware of it, but they didn't see it was that relevant, or they just completely ignored it. So it was avoidable because people were being told that this was going to happen, basically. But the Home Office made the decision to ignore all of those. But actually, so therefore, it was only a result of individuals like Paulette Wilson, Anthony Bryant, Eduardo Romeo, and many others who came forward to tell their story. And obviously, we have to recognise what Amelia Dintelman did in terms of capturing those stories. But they were just, at the time, they were just stories. I mean, what I did, I made it into an actual campaign, using those lived experiences to highlight people's the impact on family life, the economic, social loss they had, losing their jobs and homes, and their mental well-being, and also the ongoing deportation flights that were still taking place at the time, and that in many ways pulled it together into what is the scandal. But also, the campaign I did was only one element, because you had the High Commissioners campaigning, you are raising their concerns, you had organisations like JCWI and Praxis, Renamed Trust, and then you had organisations like Deportation Action raising issues around people stuck in deportation centres. Then you had kind of immigration lawyers like Jacqueline McKenzie and others also raising issues. And I mean, there's a whole range. We all work together. Me, journalists, lawyers, activists, high commissioners, diplomats, and obviously MPs, politicians, particularly Diane Abbott, David Lammy, and others, all raising, and that collective effort put pressure. So I mean, it was avoidable, and that's why we're reminding people all the time about that. And I think, it's quite important to acknowledge that, basically. It was a collective effort of different stakeholders and partners exposing the scandal.
Yeah. Now, you've mentioned there, like all the campaigning that you and others have done, is there a particular campaign that stands out and is one that you are most proud of?
You connect to the Windrush scandal?
Mm.
There have been several campaigns. The first campaign was recognition, recognising there was a scandal in the first place, because up till about March 2018, this was played out by the Home Office as individual cases. They weren't linked to each other. This just happened to be poor Caribbean people, not sorting out their paperwork. And that's the way it was portrayed, basically, for quite a while. And in the community, people assumed that that was the case. They thought, they just assumed that this was part of the wider context of people overstaying than actually that these people were British in the first place. So that campaign, the first campaign I did, was really important, because I launched a petition on the UK government website. Within about a week, got 100,000 signatures, which automatically triggered debate in Parliament. But before the debate happened in Parliament, everyone was campaigning. Lots of MPs were raising concerns before, and David Lammy made that barnstorming speech in Parliament just for, the formal debate of my petition. It became an international news story, basically. And the people were writing letters complaining, bishops were writing letters. And that's when the people realised that the more important the media, every single day there was a media story. More and more people came out of the woodwork to share their experiences of the hostile environment and the scandal. And as more and more people came out of the woodwork and being interviewed on radio, TV, that put more pressure on the Home Office till two key events, the Commonwealth Summit meeting taking place in London, where a number of high commissioners and prime ministers of different parts of the Caribbean were escalating their concerns. Theresa May didn't want to see them, and that was publicised in the newspaper, and there was such a backlash, she was forced to see them. But she only saw the Jamaican High Commission, Jamaican Prime Minister at number 10, didn't see the rest of the Caribbean CARICOM leaders. And then later on, she did see some of the ambassadors and made a the first apology publicly about apologising. From that time onwards, when she started to apologise, there was more and more pressure on the government to say, what are you going to do about it, basically? And then when Amber Rudd lied twice to Parliament about the immigration target figures, and then she resigned, that was it. It was game over. Then the government had no choice but to do a U-turn on aspects of his policy of hostile environment. To me, that was the main campaign. Obviously, there'll be other elements around the compensation scheme, around mental health and post-traumatic stress affecting victims. But I think the first bit was a real important bit to make to make it that the scandal was a problem and it was disproportionately affecting people of the Caribbean and African communities.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that spurred on so much. So it was really important that, you know, everybody was sort of aware of this problem. I think before the campaign, people weren't really aware. They were thinking, like you said, they were individual cases of just overstayers. And I think it really galvanized the community to pay attention as well. Let's talk about the lessons learned review from Wendy Williams. Now, it states institutional ignorance towards the issue of race and the history of the Windrush generation. Do you believe that the Home Office is institutionally racist? And do you think they should be handling the compensation claims of the very people that they failed?
So the question is, we need to ask ourselves is, we have the McPherson report, which came about because of the murder of Stephen Lawrence in 1993, and with the McPherson report, which then led to major legal changes in race equality legislation and put on the statute book for the first time, institutionalized racism. At that time, in 2000, all government departments admitted they were institutionally racist. So the question we need to ask ourselves, what has changed between 2000 and today in terms of, is the Home Office less institutionally racist? Is the police less institutionally racist? Is the NHS less institutionally racist? And if you say to yourself, in the context of COVID-19, Black Lives Matter, not really, then the Home Office is still institutionally racist. So, I mean, even though Wendy talked about institutional ignorance because she's only looking at one element, one part of the Home Office around a hostile environment, I suppose to look at the whole functionality of the different components of the Home Office, which is, because the Home Office is a massive beast. It's got several agencies, border control, passport office, you know, it's, you know, all the whole stuff around detention centres and resettlement programmes. It's a massive, massive department. But I haven't seen anything that demonstrates to me in the last 20-odd years that the Home Office or any other government department has been less institutionally racist. So that, to me, it still is.
And they've got lots more work to do. I mean, do you think they should be handling the compensation claims of Windrush survivors?
Well, as you know, my latest petition, and I've done about 6-7 petitions in the last 2.5 years, ranging from Windrush Day to all elements of the scandal. My latest petition is about the compensation scheme, and I fundamentally, at the heart of my petition, is that the compensation scheme needs to be removed from the Home Office for three main reasons. Number one, the Home Office has never been designed to give that level of support and empathy to refugees and asylum seekers anyway. And secondly, the Home Office is still implementing the hostile environment policy. The same directorate which has responsibility for managing the Windrush compensation scheme also deals with deportation flights and also deals with the detention centres. There is a major, fundamentally conflict of interest. How can civil servants try and be empathetic to the Windrushers and their families around their loss and emotional well-being, while at the same time still deporting people and treating people quite poorly? 6 people have died in the UK, all with health-related problems linked to the impact of stress around the hostile environment policy. So it's an anathema for them to even be managing a compensation scheme in the first place. It should be done independently, arm's length, where there is a degree of confidence for the families and the potential beneficiaries of the compensation scheme to make claims. There have been no, and also thirdly, they've not learnt the lessons. You'd think that they would think, ahead of Wendy Williams' report, they would make all the effort to really put in place the concept of restorative justice, all the government ministers keep on saying, we want to rewrite the wrongs. which is basically, in a nutshell, restorative justice. But they've not done that. So I believe that the scheme should be moved out of the Home Office as soon as possible. All victims of the Wynyrd scandal should have been given automatic payments of a minimum of £10,000 each. And then they can make additional claims, because the way that the scheme is predicated, and I know that Martin Ford has been uncolourful talking about the scheme, and I think Martin's done the best he can under the circumstances, basically. He's not managing the scheme, he's just advising the government on the scheme. But the scheme itself is based on fault base. It's still the fault of the Windrushers, and therefore they have to prove through the compensation scheme that they deserve the money. It should be the other way around. It's the fault of the government. They were the ones that put people in that situation in the first place. And therefore, the scheme should meet the needs of the victims, not the needs of the government.
I've been hearing from Windrush survivors over the last year or so through my journalism work, and many of them are still actually waiting for, you know, first correspondence from the Home Office. I've spoken to one man in particular who he put in his compensation claim in April 2019 when the scheme opened. And he's still waiting for them to sort of say, yep, we've got your claim. We're going to assign it to a caseworker. He hasn't even had that yet. And it's, you know, almost a year and a half later. So, you know, there's definitely something that needs to be done. And I don't think the Home Office should be the ones responsible for issuing compensation to Windrush victims, because it's just too much of a conflict of interest.
Yeah, and absolutely. And I'm hoping, I mean, just under 60,000 people have signed that petition, and I'm hoping that if we can get another 40,000, then I'd like to take, a number of the Windrushers, some of the victims, and the daughter of the late Paulette Wilson, Natalie. She had was struggling to complete the compensation forms, and I'm in regular contact with the family, and they're very angry how her mother was treated, and so I think we need to fight on to make sure that the compensation schemes move at the Home Office and fair and proper, and people get paid. People are struggling. They are really struggling, and they need to get the compensation they deserve.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, since the highly publicised Windrush scandal more than 2 years ago, we're talking about the compensation scheme here, but in terms of everything else, do you think enough is being done to right the wrongs and put things right? Obviously, the compensation scheme has its issues in terms of how long it's taking, in terms of how complicated the forms are, and in terms of just the small payouts so far. In terms of everything else, do you think enough is being done?
Absolutely not. Going back to my original petition I did in April 2018, I had three main kind of aims in that petition. Number one, automatic status for everyone that's been affected by the hostile environment. And what I mean by that, the government deemed people, if they didn't have any paperwork to prove that you're British and you were deemed illegal, people had to go through this arduous process of having loads of paperwork and documentation to prove they were British, basically. That's still happening. They made it less arduous, but it's still arduous still. And what should happen is people should be automatically saying, you are British, we're not going to ask you any more additional information, because we have all the information that we have on you already, because you've been here for such a long time. So you're British, no problem, don't worry about it. Here's your biometric card, end of. Why is it only recently, about a month ago, that the British government, in the context of the hostile situation between Hong Kong and mainland China, why is it when the government automatically said 3 million Chinese plus all their dependents will have automatic status of being British? They've not gone through the hostile environment. They've not gone through the Windrush task force to prove that they're British. They've been automatically, just like that, been told you're British. But yet, when it comes to black people, we still have to prove that we're British. This is really contradictory. It begs the fundamental question: how are we valued as black people in Britain after 400 years of enslavement? All the contribution that we've made to British society, basically, and we've fought in all the major world wars, well, from Battle of Waterloo, all the major world wars, major conflicts, and yet we still have to fight to prove that we're British. So that is still fundamental. Now, if you talk about right and the wrongs, and the government have the cheek and the audacity to use the language of right and the wrongs, which came out of the civil rights Black Power movement in the 60s, which was about justice, restorative justice, fighting Jim Crow and segregation in America. And they've used it in the context of the Windrush scandal to say that we care about Black people. You don't care about Black people, because if you did, then you'd be right, then you'd be giving us automatic status. You'd have a compensation scheme was based on restorative justice. You would stop deportation flights, basically, because you're breaking up families. And fundamentally, and more importantly, you still have in place a system of discrimination which affects not only people from African and Caribbean, but other communities linked to the Commonwealth as well, not valuing the Commonwealth, as you can call it. So, you know, the government, I mean, when the Williams recommendation has some really good recommendations about what needs to happen, but those recommendations tell you that the government still doesn't understand what's right and the wrongs. Priti Patel was more incensed by the removal of Colson's statue than the tens of thousands of victims experienced in the hostile environment and the people that have died under the government's hostile environment policy.
Patrick, you're somebody who's been campaigning for Windrush survivors for the longest time, and you speak so passionately about the Black community. What advice would you give to people listening right now if they feel like they have been caught up in the Windrush scandal, but they still haven't come forward to maybe put in a claim for compensation, or they still haven't come forward to try and get their citizenship? What advice would you give to them as somebody who is on the community side?
I think it's important for anyone who feel that if you, and you probably know this, that you're not quite sure about your status in Britain, try and get some independent legal advice. There are a whole range of organisations out there. You know, some of them have been featured on the programme, such as JCWI. You've got lawyers like Jackie McKenzie, is working with Black Culture Archives, and the Black Culture Archives, along with other community organisations around the country, in Birmingham, in Nottingham, in Manchester, in Preston, are organising community surgeries where they're bringing together lawyers who are donating their time free of charge, who are happy to look at people's paperwork, documentation and status as well. So I think that's quite important for people to check out, to get the advice so you can decide what decision you need to make. I think for those who are still struggling with the compensation scheme forms, again, those same organisations are organising surgeries and assistance as well. And I think finally, we still need to campaign completely, I've got this petition, which is on 38 degrees, around to improve the compensation scheme. Just sign it, share it with your friends, family. The more people sign the petitions, I mean, not people might think petitions don't make a difference, but they do make a difference. And I'll give you a good example. Only recently, back in June, I had a petition which over 130,000 people signed around the implementation of the Lesson Learned Review. That petition was presented to number 10 by Paulette Wilson and Anthony Bryant. And that petition had so much impact because there was so much media coverage around them presenting that petition that forced the government to then admit that they were going to now, after 4 months on sitting on the Lesson Learned Review, that they were going to implement that. Petitions do work. Collective action does work, along with direct action and a whole range of things. And I sometimes feel that in the community, we are very good at analysing and critiquing, but we don't do enough action ourselves. Our ancestors did, that's what they did on the plantations. They took action, and we have to take action if we want to have proper justice and proper recognition as rights as Black British people in Britain.
Absolutely. Now, Patrick, you've recently been featured in British Vogue as an activist for change, and rightly so. How did you feel about being mentioned and honoured in this way for all your work you've done?
I mean, obviously, any kind of recognition is great because, I mean, you don't do it for the recognition. Well, I don't anyway. I do it because there's a job that needs to be done. So it's always an added bonus to get any form of recognition. You know, it's done from a community group recognising what I've done to, obviously, something like British Vogue, which is a very mainstream, popular magazine. So I was surprised. I got this email, you know, literally from British Vogue, and so we, you know, you've been nominated. Can we come around and take a picture of you? I said, what am I going to wear? I said, my wardrobe. What am I going to wear? God, I've never been in a magazine. I've never posed like that before. Anyway, so
and especially being in lockdown for so long,
Well, I mean, I there's online shopping, so I cheat that online shopping. But anyway, it's great to be honoured. But I know that there are other people who weren't featured in the magazine. Obviously, it's always limited how many people you can have. I was lucky. I mean, they chose about 40 people globally around the world. So it's great to be recognised in that international context. But I know there are lots of activists out there who are doing fantastic work in the community, and hopefully they'll get the recognition that they deserve as well. It's recognising me and other people. But we're working on the Woolworths scandal. It recognises the late Paulette Wilson. She was an active campaigner. It recognises the late Sarah O'Connor. She was an active campaigner. And it recognises a whole range of campaigners and activists who are involved in the struggle. So it's an honour to recognise that. But I'm not going to get the day job yet. Some people made some jokes. Oh, Patrick, are you going to do some modelling? I don't think so. I'm not sure modelling is my vocation, to be quite honest. But I think the key thing is about having recognition gives you the extra energy to keep going and keep fighting, basically. You know, it's not about resting your laurel and say, job done. There's still more work that needs to be done. And if I can use this platform of this recognition to further highlight the Woolworths scandal and the wider structural impact of racism affecting black people and other communities in Britain, then fine, I'm happy to use that status to fight the good fight, to raise and articulate and to advocate.
Absolutely. We wouldn't want you to stop doing what you're doing. You know, you've been so vocal and so passionate, and we really do appreciate everything that you have done. Lastly, what would you like to see happen in terms of where the hostile environment is concerned?
I think a couple of things I would love to see. Number one, the removal of the compensation scheme from the Home Office. It would be really fantastic if that was removed, managed independently. I think that would help a lot of the victims of the Woolworths scandal to have the confidence and the right necessary support to get the compensation they deserve. It's about 2.5 years on. A lot of people have not been paid for the loss and suffering they've had for many years. I think secondly, there are rumours that the government are going to start deportation flights again. And it's actually crazy. Why are they doing deportation flights in the height of a pandemic around the world? So if you're going to get deported, what's going to happen there? How are you going to be self-isolated? What support are you going to have? It's actually ridiculous that the government's even thinking about doing deportation flights in a situation where countries in the Caribbean, Africa, are trying to cope with their own challenges. You know, so we have to make sure that doesn't happen. There are no more deportation flights.
Sorry, you just mentioned that. Sorry to interrupt. You just mentioned that the government may be restarting deportation flights. I just wanted to ask you: do you know how that would work? So, say they were going to deport somebody to Jamaica, but Jamaica is not letting in any flights from the UK, because the Caribbean have been kind of doing that, where they've been barring flights from high-risk areas. That wouldn't apply to deportation flights, or are you not quite sure?
That is a good question, Sanaa. That's a very good question. The flights haven't resumed anyway, so we can go to the Caribbean, but the difference is you have to self-isolate for 2 weeks when you arrive in the Caribbean. You know, most Caribbean islands have got a policy, to be quite honest, and most places around the world have got a policy, and we've got this policy also as well, with this air corridor thing. But how that's going to work for someone who's been, say, stuck in a detention centre for several months, then go on those deportation flights, charter flights. And then, we already know that when people have been deported back to Jamaica, there is no any support on the ground for them. None whatsoever. Mm. So how's that going to work? I don't know. That's why I think we need to resist this. I think it's a crazy idea them doing that in the first place, but the very fact they want to do it during a critical time when we now know there's going to be a second pandemic, not just here in the UK, but potentially around. I mean, so the country's still dealing with the first rise of the pandemic. Now there needs a second rise. So it's absolutely a crazy idea that they want to do that. Absolutely. And we need to campaign and to ensure that that doesn't happen. And I think the third and ultimate is hostile environment policy. You know, I've been involved, as you know, around Holster from Windrush Day, which is, I think, as important. We need to still celebrate and acknowledge the contribution of the Windrush generation, the history that we've made to Britain. But I've always said on record, we always Windrush Day will always be half a day because the hostile environment is still in place. So because the hostile environment works on the premise that we're not really British. You know, it doesn't really apply to Americans or Australians or people in New Zealand or Canada. It applies to us, people of colour, bottom line, black people particularly. You know, and, you know, we still have a crazy situation that you still have to apply for a visa from the Caribbean or and certain African countries to come to Britain. That's still in that was even before the hostile environment policy was in place. We need to, that is part of the wider thing that we need to get rid of. So we need to campaign for all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So much more work to do, Patrick. Now, if people wanted to follow you on social media to keep up with all your campaigns and all the work you're doing, where can they get in touch with you online?
Yeah, well, luckily, I've been working on updating my website. So you can go to my website, patrickvernon.org.uk, and you'll see what I'm up to. But also you can see what I'm up to on my Twitter feed and Facebook page and LinkedIn page. Instagram page, so it's all Patrick Vernon. So, and then you can see the campaigns I'm involved with, what other campaigns. I'm also supporting other people's campaigns. It's not just simply about my own campaign. I'm actually supporting other campaigns. Some campaigns I'm helping unofficially, so you won't know that I'm directly involved in the campaign because I'm giving lots of free advice and a lot of support to individuals and community organisations offline to help them in their campaigns as well. I think it's important to use. I've been lucky and I saw it's quite effective in some elements of campaigning work I've done for many years and my activism work. But so part of what I want to do is to share that those my tips, my experiences, my perspectives to help people, so help other people's campaigns as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely a man of the people. Patrick Vernon, thank you so much for speaking to me today.
No, it's a pleasure, and keep up the good work. Colourful, you're an important asset for the community. One of the key things I have learned through campaigning and advocacy and activism is working with the media. The media is really, really important because the media can amplify the campaign. The media can encourage people to get involved. The media can educate and also inform. So I just want to thank you, everyone at Colourful Radio, and the team, and obviously Kofi and everyone, but also the other media platforms who I've worked with over the years. Without the media, you cannot, and never will have an effective campaign.
In the interest of balance, we asked the Home Office to respond to Patrick Vernon's suggestions that the Home Office should have been able to grant similar citizenship status to the Windrush generation as they did for Hong Kong citizens. The Home Office responded with the following statement.
In response to China's implementation of their national security legislation, the UK government is opening a new immigration route for British National Overseas or BNO citizens and their dependents. The bespoke new route recognises the historic and moral obligation to those BNO citizens and it's going to open from January 2021. It is not true to say that BNO citizens are given automatic citizenship. They'll be eligible to apply for 5 years leave to remain with the right to work or study. They can then choose to apply for either 30 months leave followed by another 30-month period or all 5 years at once. After those 5 years, they can apply to settle, which is known as indefinite leave to remain, and after a further 12 months, they'll be able to apply for citizenship.
You have been listening to Windrush, What's Next? The Struggle for Justice with me, Sinai Flairy, and my special guest, Patrick Vernon OBE. Join me on the next episode where I will be speaking to Satbir Singh, who is the Chief Executive at the Joint Council for the Welfare of Immigrants, and Bella Sankey, who is the Director of Detention Action.
The Windrush What's Next series is supported by funds from the Paul Hamlin Foundation.